You're listening to Profiles on your VOCM. I'm Jerry Lynn Mackey. My special guest today is David Howells, well-known photographer. You have a long background of all types of different photography. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you doing?
Wonderful. So this is Profiles, where we endeavor to get to know people within our community, and I have a lot of questions about your professional life, but I guess let's start at the beginning. I know you're not from Newfoundland and Labrador originally. Where are you from?
Well, that is a ridiculously long answer because it changes on to who I'm talking to. If you're British, I was born in Cornwall in the UK, but I lived there for all of 2 months. And then my dad worked for a part of the Foreign Office. And so I grew up in the Caribbean and Africa.
Wow. Yeah, a worldly guy.
Well, this is sort of explains my ridiculously bad skin complexion these days.
And now you live in Newfoundland and Labrador. How did this come about?
Again, there's no short stories with this. So I met a Newfoundland girl in a bar in Kingston, Ontario, long, long, long time ago. And I thought she was this unique beauty. And it's funny because I didn't actually get to Newfoundland after we'd been together for 10 years and realized there's a whole island stuffed with unique beauties. So it was so I met this girl, who's now my wife, obviously, and we moved to the UK for a few years. And then I got a job opportunity in New York. So went to New York, and that was meant to be for a year. That turned out to be 15 years. Our daughter was born there. And then when it was sort of round about the Great Recession, around 2009, 2010, I was working for the British newspapers, which was great because they didn't have anything, what we call a budget. They would just phone you up and say, you'd have your bags packed and your passport all ready to go. The weird thing was they'd phone you up and say, are you free? If you said you were free, then they would tell you what the job was. And if you said you weren't free, they'd say, okay, we'll speak to you next week. Mm-hmm. Now, there was only about three photographers in the States who actually did what I did. It was a very British newspapers would only trust photographers that they knew and trusted and were British, because we have obviously no ethics and no morals, it turns out. So the Americans would always be like, oh, we can't do that. That's that's ethically wrong. And of course, we had no
sense. The English would say no problem.
But it's funny because a lot of stories that would appear in the American press were always broken by the British media, because while we were very close to breaking the law, you couldn't actually break the law. There was the book I will write with all the stories eventually will be called Please Legal, because you had to bend the laws. You know, one side of the job was doing what I call investigative journalism. Paparazzi would be a dirty word, but I wasn't a paparazzi because that'd be a sort of celebrity
right
stuff.
Right place, right time.
Right, yeah. And this would be, we were actually digging on stories. And of course, people didn't want to have their stories exposed. And so you have to sort of bend the law to be as close as you could get without actually breaking it, because then you're in all sorts of problems. So I can't remember, where was I going with this again? This is my tangential story.
You would get the call.
Oh, yeah. So we'd get the call, and you would basically, if they said yes, they say, okay, right, you're on a 5:30 flight to Rio.
Jet setter.
And you would
lifestyle.
Just be, I promised my wife that I would have a rethink when I got to either a million miles, did all 50 states, or hit 40. And it all happened within about a month or two. And I didn't say anything. I just kept quiet because I loved what I was doing. And it was very exciting. You lived, the joke is you got paid like a pauper, but you lived like a prince.
Right.
Because it was all on expenses, beautiful hotels, business class travel, the whole thing, right?
And it was years and years of this. I mean, what are some of the standouts for you? Are there any?
Well, we do not have enough time, to be honest with you, because it can go on and on and on. But there was, the famous stories would be, there's a David Beckham story in Brazil, but I can't tell you about that. That's just...
Is he as down to earth as he seems on TikTok?
He is a super, super nice guy.
Yeah.
And considering the stress he was under at the time, he was nothing but a... You know, it's funny because when you see all these people, I'm not a particularly big guy, and I'm exactly the same size he is.
As David Beckham.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he does have this rather squeaky high voice, which is great. So there is actually probably a God.
Did you have to photograph David Beckham?
I'll tell the story. Okay, so there was this big soccer competition in Brazil, and I was sent from I lived in Miami at the time, and I was, you're not meant to stay in the same hotel as the soccer teams are. But nobody knew who I was because I'd left the UK. I had, like, I was tanned and I had blonde hair and didn't look like a pasty British photographer. Whereas all the other photographers were from Manchester because he played for Manchester United, and they were doing all the games. And so I was there sent especially just to watch him, just to see what he was going to be doing. And he got sent off, and so he was by himself by the swimming pool, and I was as far away as you could get with I've got a lucky hat that I bought the day before I met my wife. It's in my bag every trip. It's still in my bag.
That is so sweet.
It's still in my bag now. It's the lucky hat. And I had my camera under the hat, and I've just lifted up, click, click, click. And this is all on film. This is back in the late 90s. And so I thought he hadn't seen me, and what he'd done, he dried his face. And as he dried his face, his hand came down into a prayer motion. And I thought that was, obviously, the camera totally lies. And so it looked like he was praying for forgiveness, was the story that they ran with it. Obviously, as a lot of British tabloids, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. He packed up and ready to go. And I was miles away, and there was a Brazilian couple next to me and three Lufthansa stewardesses to the left of me. And I could see him walking around the outside of the pool, and it's like, there's no way he's seen me. I'm miles away. So I sort of get back to reading my airport novel, and I see this pair of very famous pair of legs come up behind me and stand next to me, and they're soccer feet, so they're all, you know, bloody and
beaten,
bruised and beaten
from
and
all the kicks.
Yeah. And then I hear this, ahem, ahem. And I look up, and he goes, "You're really, really rude, you are. You're really rude, aren't you? You're taking my picture." And so I stand up, and we're basically we're facing off at this point. I said, "Well, of course I'm taking your picture. You're David Beep Beckham, aren't you?" And he goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well, why do you think I'm here? You know, and you know the game, David." And then we started getting into it and this sort of backwards and forwards. And I said, "Listen, I'm trying to be as respectful as, you know, I'm not getting in your face and all this sort of stuff, right?" Then the Brazilian guy realizes that David Beckham is standing next to him, comes across and goes, you David Beckingham. Yes, you David Beckingham. And he's like, "Yeah." He goes, "We have picture." And he hands me, he goes, "You're a photographer." Gives me his compact camera. And then I have to take a picture of the Brazilian couple with David Beckham in between. And I said to him, "Well, this is ironic, isn't it?" But he was such a nice guy about it. Even though he was so annoyed, he would still be. And then afterwards, a couple of us went up to him and sort of said, "Listen, if you're, you know, this is not what we do, and feel kind of bad about this." And he said, I said, "Would you join us for lunch?" And he said, "I'd love to." And then he said, "But if Fergie, Alex Ferguson, found out," he said, "hey, it'd have me nuts on a platter." Which was just, and at the end, we all bought, I didn't, but everybody bought Brazilian soccer jerseys, and he signed everybody's to their kids. And, you know, he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it's like, I've always been amazed by, you know, so what happened was I was never very good at that, and I didn't really enjoy it because it was not my skills. And so I ended up doing a lot of portraiture when I moved back to New York. And that's where I met an awful lot of celebrities and became, quote unquote, a celebrity photographer, which was where. And again, it's apart from a couple of people who weren't great, I was always amazed by how wonderful the people I photographed were, and considering how famous they were and how down to earth, you know, everybody that puts their pants on the same way, essentially.
And I think it's about trust too.
It is.
Once you have one good shoot with someone who is prominent, then they tell their friend that this guy you can trust, kind of thing. So there is a moment where you sort of have to get to know that person a little bit to make them comfortable.
Well, it has to happen extremely quickly. And again, this is another gift from my mother, is being able to read people very quickly. And I'm an untrustworthy chameleon because I can change on depending on who I'm talking to.
You seem very trustworthy.
Well, again, it's like once you can fake that, you've got it made, as they say. But it's you do have to get people to trust you. Now, it's granted that the newspapers and magazines I was working for were the biggest in the world. So that's how I got access to these people. And I guess they figured that if you're working for these people on a regular basis, then you must be good. And but the difficult thing, and I've said this before, is that when you're photographing famous people, they've been photographed time and time and time again. And the difficult bit is you're not only you're up against everybody else that's ever photographed them before. And it's not a competition, because everybody photographs in their own way. You just hope that your way is better than everybody else's. That's the, you know, that's the goal. And it's funny, I've become a little bit of a obituary specialist, that a lot of the people that I photograph that have died, they end up, like the New York Times or the Washington Post or whatever, is end up using my pictures as their obituary pictures. Or,
which is an honor, I bet.
It really is. Yeah. Which, but it also means I'm getting something else out of people. Like there was Kate Spade, unfortunately, died a few years ago, and everybody used my portrait of her. Now, was it a particularly, this was shot sort of earlier on before I really got the hang of celebrity portraits. And I did take a beautiful picture of her that never got used. But the other pictures had her looking what I would call normal. She looked normal. And it was because when I was going through it, you know, all my archive is with Getty Images. And so they just, when somebody dies, they go to Getty and they sell it. But it was interesting that a lot of the pictures I saw on the internet when I was searching to see who would actually use this, she didn't look well. And this one picture, she looked happy, and this is why they used it. She was obviously having a good day. Yeah. And that was the reason why they used it. And it was Getty Images. I understand that, too, that people go to Getty first.
Wow. And that's just one or two stories. And we're at the end of segment one here on your VOCM profiles. Fascinating stuff. We need 2 hours to talk to you, David.
At least 2 hours.
There you go. My guest is photographer David Howells. We'll be right back with more on your VOCM profiles.
Every Saturday is perfect for a night at the cabin. The Cabin Party with Brian O'Connell. Saturday night starting at 7 p.m. on VOCM.
Welcome back to Profiles on your VOCM. I'm Jerry Lynn Mackey, and my special guest today is photographer David Howells, illustrious photographer with a long history of photographing a lot of famous people, a lot of events, landscapes here. You were at the Torngat Mountains. I mean, those are iconic photos that came out of Labrador. Tell me about the progression of your career, because, I mean, you've always been involved in photography, but it's really morphed over the years.
Yeah, if you were to ask me 10, 15 years ago what I'd be doing today, I'd be saying, absolutely not. It's like, it's, you know, the old dog, new trick type sort of thing. I mean, this is one of the things what I love about Newfoundland, is you get given the opportunities to do things that you would not be able to do elsewhere, because people just sort of, like, you know, say, oh, shag it, let's go and do it. And that doesn't happen anywhere else. There's too many layers everywhere else. Here, there is a level of trust that you can produce something, and they'll just, like, you know, so the Torngat trip. So I went from being a full-time photojournalist in New York, then the recession happened, and instead of flying 100,000...
Like 09.
09, 010, yep. And I'd always promised my wife that we'd bought a house here years ago, that if things... New York is very expensive, and you have to work constantly to do it to make ends meet. And I had a great life, and it was great. I was on the road. I was doing 100,000 miles a year flying. I was, you know, I was doing the biggest jobs you could do with all the presidential conventions and presidential campaigns, photographing lots of famous people. And then it stopped. And it was amazing that you could guarantee the 1st of January would tell you what the year was going to be like. If you worked on the 1st of January, you'd be off to the races. And if you didn't work on the 1st of January, it would be a slow year. And it's funny because it's like...
So that was like the litmus test.
It was like totally... You know, so I was in the news business for 20 years. So this wasn't just like, oh, this is what it's like. This is exactly what it's like. And then 09 or 10, I can't remember which year it was, it went from me flying all over the Americas constantly to doing maybe a couple of jobs a month. And that was, like, not enough.
Wow.
And it literally just disappeared. I said to my wife, I said, all right, okay, you know what? Let's do it. Let's go home to your mother. And it's funny because she doesn't actually have a Newfoundland accent. But we moved to Newfoundland. Yeah. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. Not really any photojournalism of what I was doing was here. And I thought, well, I can get a job at Timmy's if I have to, you know, do this. Anyway, that's not what happened, obviously. I ended up morphing into advertising. And so I ended up working for Husky then, and so I worked for Exxon and Fortis and Rio Tinto. They're my four really big clients that send me all over the world to do. I'm still leaving. I'm still on the plane. So I get my precious air miles still, right. And I, you know, get to look disparagingly at people walking to the back of the plane, and, you know, the things that make me actually a human. And
the things that you remember doing in New York.
Exactly. Make me a horrible person, I think. but then there's this thing where there's an artiness there that in Newfoundland, that the arts are so important, and especially, you know, this year is the year of the arts and what have you. So I like the big industry. It pays the bills. And I'm very, very, very lucky that I'm basically allowed to shoot whatever I want to shoot, make it look pretty, make it look beautiful. And it's funny because a lot of my British friends are like, you know, how can you work for these major industries, you know, if you have no ethics? And I'm like, well, you did know that I worked for the British media for 20 years, so obviously I'm morally bankrupt, so I can literally do anything.
You're like, I'm over it now.
I'm over it.
Yeah. But you can bring an artfulness to that.
Well, this is the thing, and this is what you're allowed to do here. And it's really unusual. I know... It's I can't sort of explain it correctly that in a lot of other places, the creative team have an idea, and then that goes to the art director, that goes down, and then finally it's given to the photographer, this is what we want you to do. And in my opinion, that is completely wrong, because you're asking the photographer to try and photograph something that he's not necessarily good at doing. And what I've done is that this is how we're going to do it. And I'm going to make it look good because this is how I shoot and how I see it. And you can have, there's, you know, a lot of very talented photographers in this province, but we all see things differently. And that's the thing about photography is that, you know, obviously I have imitators and things like that, because that's fine. I imitated people when I was young. That's the way it is. I saw this great T-shirt.
That's how you learn, I guess.
Well, it is. Right. But I saw this great T-shirt on Instagram a couple of days ago. It said, stop copying me. You're not even doing it right. And it was like, and because what it is a lot of people think it's like the cameras or the lenses. And it's not, but it helps, but obviously, but it's actually the most important thing is the idea. If you don't have the original idea and you don't, you know, again, it's like I've done various talks about this, is that a lot of the ideas come from me. I sit in my bathtub every night, and sorry, listeners, and I turn out all the lights. And I just sort of sit there, and this sort of my mind just disappears. So we've got another incredible trip coming up this summer with Opera on the Avalon, which I'll talk about how I got into that in a minute. And we're going up on a Venture Canada boat, and we're going up through the Torn Gats. And we've got a dancer and a singer. And so we have to come up with videos. So Drew Kennedy and Roger Moore, the filmmaker Roger Moore, are sort of more in charge of that, and I'm in charge of the stills, the portraits. But now, again, talking about how careers change, is that Roger asked me to do more filming, and all of a sudden I'm now basically a documentary filmmaker. We just had the Forgotten Warriors on the CBC last week. Incredibly proud to be a part of that. It was such a powerful film. But then we've got, earlier this year, Roger and I went to the Philippines to do a documentary on a 107-year-old female tattoo artist, of which I showed you. I have the three dots. Not great tattoo, to be honest with you, but looks like I've been in
San Quentin. Traditionally
speaking. Well, traditionally done, exactly. And it's like, it looked like I've been in San Quentin for 10 years. Part of that was, you know, originally would be I'd do the portrait of her. But then all of a sudden I realized that you can bring a photographic aesthetic to cinema. And it's like all it is moving stills, right. Just going very fast. And it's all about still always about the basics. Do people look good? How's the light? You know, obviously there's more to it than that. But essentially, when you boil it down, that's what's happening. And so that's been very exciting that obviously it's never going to be my full-time work because I don't like the editing, the cutting, all that. That's not what I do. The arty side of stuff. So it's great to have the big industry, and I'm allowed to pretty much do what I want, which is great, as long as I make it look pretty. And it's, again, all of this is about portraits. It always comes down to portraits. It's I've just come back from Belfast for Synovus doing the Sea Rose in Dry Dock. There's a lot of landscape pictures to make it look beautiful, lots of long exposures and moving clouds and dodging the rain, because it rains constantly there, it turns out. But essentially, it's about portraits. It's still about portraits. All these years later, it's still about portraits.
A portrait of the sea rose,
yeah. And the people. We all know what this thing looks like, but it's the people, the important part of this. And again, it's like with all the sort of, let's say for Rio Tinto, for example, is we know what the mine looks like. We do a nice landscape of the mine, but it's the people that work in the mine are actually the true story. And that's what actually gets used at the end of the day in the annual reports.
Are the people,
because that is who it is. A few years ago, Roger Maunder, who is a very close friend of mine, and Cheryl Hickman, who's the boss of Opera on the Avalon, again, Newfoundland having its own opera company. That just says everything about Newfoundland, in my opinion. And again, of course, because obviously Cheryl, you know, sung at the Met in New York for years, so she's the real deal. Yeah. And that's the thing about sort of Newfoundland is you have real deals coming home. And so what we have to do here has to be world class. It can't be the, you know, sort of, oh, look at them with their little opera. Right. No, this has to be, you know, and again, I've turned into a true Newfoundlander. I've got a giant chip on my shoulder that I'm like, just because we're here doesn't mean we're not brilliant at what we do. And, you know, it's because it always used to be this thing that, you know, oh, we'll get somebody in from Montreal, get somebody in from Toronto to do this. And it's like, why?
There's homegrown talent right here.
Right here.
Yep. Or talent that, you know, we recruited and brought back here.
Exactly. In my case, what happened was is that Cheryl said to me, it's like, well, you know, we've got COVID. Nobody's performing. We want to showcase performers, not just opera, but all the performers, because there's so much talent stuffed here, right? He said, well, Roger's going to do videos, and we want you to just do a headshot that we can just advertise with it. And I was like, what I heard was, Dave, you're absolutely amazing. We want you to take over the whole thing, and just we make this all about yourself,
yeah,
which is essentially what happened.
And so you were given free rein.
Given free rein. But here's the thing, is that it was almost like a lid being taken off, because, you know, I've always been fairly creative. But when you're given literally free range to do whatever you want, and you have this amazing team helping you do it, then all of a sudden you've got, it's like, well, okay, what can I do?
And it's, and this is where the bathtub fits
in. And this
in.
Is where the bathtub, yep, fits in. And you just sort of sit there and you lie back. And again, it's as I always say, I've said this a million times before, is by the time I've taken the picture, I've already shot it in my head months before. It shouldn't be a surprise what I get. Knocking the table here. I'm a great believer in luck and coincidence, and I've got a horseshoe the size of a dinner plate stuck in my rear end. Because,
but you must also have a very conceptual mind to be able to visualize it and then execute.
Well, this is the interesting thing. So in the news business, you are not encouraged to have a conceptual mind. What they want is deadlines within minutes. There's an awful lot of screaming. If you have seen a film about newsrooms, it's much, much, much worse.
I'm not saying anything.
I know why you're not. Okay. It's like, it's because of people I can see, the sort of people you'd be swearing at.
Some of my favorite people you're talking about.
They're great.
It's true, though, because tension rises.
You have no time. And the news business is all about time and deadlines. And it's funny, when I first got into the corporate advertising side, I said, well, what's a deadline? They said, oh, it's a tight one. We need it in 3 weeks. And I'd be, you know, literally used to...
tonight.
Well, because I was always working against time, because I was 5 hours in the States. I was always 5 hours behind London. And we thought ourselves we were great, because LA was 8 hours behind London. It only happened once. I got this picture of that they were waiting for, and the editor of a British newspaper, I could hear screaming on the phone, hold the front pages. It only happened once, but it was like, I remember, like,
this is it.
Yeah. And literally, it was on film, and you had to go and get it developed and then get one frame scanned. And this, you know, it's like, it gets very excitable. Yeah. Because there's a lot of people, you know, people in the news business attracts a certain type of adrenaline junkie. Yeah. You know, I was allowed to do with my portraits for the newspapers and magazines. I was allowed to. It's where I discovered my style, and that was a very important part of growing. What happens is you have this moment and sort of epiphany where up until this point you photograph people what you think they want, and then suddenly you photograph what you want. And you hope that they like it. That's the big thing. And the more you get stuck into a style. I can photograph any way I want, but that's not what people want. They want the Dave Howell style. So then with the opera thing, it started off as very much a Roger would do his video and I'd do the portrait or whatever it was. And now it's very much, we've got this team of obviously Roger Maunder and Drew Kennedy on the West Coast who are ridiculously talented. And then I'd be brought in to do more video. And it still do the stills, yeah, basically. A couple of years ago, I was lying in the bathtub, and I had this sort of eureka moment. And it was to get a dancer at the end of Westernbrook Pond. And if you've been flying on Air Canada recently, that the safety video is exactly the spot where we photograph this. But in order to do this, you have to get a helicopter up there. And so poor old Cheryl is making these demands. Cheryl, I need a helicopter. And then there's a level of trust there, because the helicopter's not cheap. you know,
so she has to trust that the product that you're envisioning
will work.
Is worth it.
And like I said, the good job that that's me doing it face. And luckily, the horseshoe was well and truly in there, and beautiful sunset, and we photographed it from a helicopter of her dancing. And it was just one of these things where you know exactly as it looked, exactly as my brain had seen it. And if it hadn't worked, then you know that would be some pretty hard explaining going on. With all this stuff, there's the team there, the amount. It's not just me saying I want to do this. There's a level of planning. The costume designer Keith Roberts is so ridiculously talented. You know, I'll message him and say, listen, you know, there's another picture we did of this ice queen in the forest, and I said, you know, think Tilda Swinton in an ice sort of situation. And within a couple of minutes, he'd sent me these drawings back, and then basically put together completely handmade costume, which looks like it's something out of a major Disney production.
The whimsy and the magic is captured with the costume.
And the talent that there's somebody here that can do that. Bonkers.
So you're not leaving.
Bonkers.
You're not
I'm going to... My wife has said, we've got another adventure somewhere. And it's like, no, I'm going out feet first. No interest in going anywhere.
It's, David Howells, we got about a minute left here. But I did want to ask you quickly, if you can boil it down for any young photographers who are listening right now, who are inspired by what you're saying and want a piece of the life, any advice for them?
Go out and take pictures. That's the only way you do it. The more pictures you take, the better you get. You know, looking back at some early stuff, and there's moments of brilliance in with a lot of mediocrity. And what the idea is to get those more moments of brilliance and less mediocrity. And the only way you can do that is taking more pictures and trusting that your vision of how you see the world is a good one.
Great words to go out on. David Howells, I'm so grateful that you could join me here for Profiles on your VOCM. We'll have him back next week because there's more stories in there. Oh, thank you again.
Thank you very much.